Hello and welcome to this EG Property Podcast. I'm Tim Burke, EG's Deputy Editor, and today we're talking about climate technology investment in the real estate space. I'm joined in the studio by Dominic Wilson and Mary Kriabardis-Singh from Vector 7 Investment Partners, an early stage investor that in January set out to raise a $25 million climate tech fund focused on real estate. Today we'll talk about exactly what they want to achieve. Dom, Mary, thank you both for joining EG. When you launched this fund, you said you wanted to redefine how the real assets industries use tech to address a variety of sustainability challenges. What will that redefinition look like in practice? Take me through where we are now and where you think we can go.
I think in terms of the real estate industry, there's been a real shift in terms of looking at climate and how they can reduce carbon and greenhouse gas emissions in the industry. And technology has a huge part to play in that. We're seeing a real focus now on how this technology can be used within buildings and in kind of adjacent industries as well to the real estate industry. And we're also seeing some really interesting, shifts in terms of the technology within climate tech. If you look at climate tech compared to other technologies, you're seeing both the software, but you're also seeing more hardware if you're looking at sensors and hardware, I guess the physical products within and how that can interact with the software. And you're also seeing some really interesting teams in the backgrounds that have those sustainability backgrounds and can bring that to the real estate industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd add to that by saying that when it comes to climate, I mean, just away from sort of real estate, real assets, right? For a second, just think about climate and think about emissions and the journey that we collectively are all on. There is a maturing of that landscape, right? In terms of understanding, you know, different cycles, different sort of, you know, embodied elements, operational elements within businesses and everything else. And so real estate and real assets, like a lot of other industries, are having to redefine, when we talk about that redefinition, of having to think about what that actually looks like. So sort of historically, sustainability within real estate has been probably focused largely on, you know, energy efficiency, really. You know, in terms of, you know, inside the four walls of a building, electricity use and things like that. Whereas now, you know, I think there is a demand from stakeholders to look at the entire kind of supply chain, the embodied kind of carbon element. And that goes obviously far beyond just, you know, the four walls and a roof. Mm-hmm. It's about how your people within the building are using it, how they're getting there, the transport links, the infrastructure, and how all that kind of links up together. So real estate, I think, is probably got a lot of work to do on its own, but it's part of a wider movement that's still got a lot of work to do. It's not like it's just in isolation.
And did the COVID pandemic shift this again? I know we'll come on to the companies that that you've backed, but one of them is a software company focused on hybrid working. Is there a kind of post-pandemic nuance to this?
100%. So, I mean, I think, you know, thinking about our own way of investing in the way that we look at this, we're looking at, I guess, solutions that directly impact emission volumes and emission levels. But then we're also looking at behavioral changing kind of technologies. So, and how those behavioral changes and paradigm shifts lead to a different way of operating, which in turn also, you know, should change the landscape from a, you know, in a positive way, from a sustainability point of view. So there was a lot of, you know, strong evidence during the pandemic of the way emissions kind of completely kind of dropped as a result of obviously this enforced sort of hybrid working, which has now become a little bit, become far more mainstream, and how you optimize for that as a corporation, as an organization, you know, like EG or anyone else, is probably key to the how long that continues on for, right? As opposed to, well, we had to do it because it was a lockdown. Actually, you know, operationally, our teams aren't functioning well, so we're going to give up on that and bring everyone back into the office 5 days a week. A lot of people kind of fell into a remote working kind of pattern, that probably wasn't as productive as it should be. So Cadence, which is the company that you mentioned, is clearly addressing that and means that a hybrid model is here to stay and at a highly optimized level.
Take me through the kind of companies that you're targeting with the fund. What are you looking for?
Yeah, we're looking for companies, obviously within the climate tech space, companies that are building products for, as you mentioned, the real estate industry, but also we're looking beyond that. If you're looking at infrastructure, transportation, water, so anything that is related to kind of that into those industries. We're investing in technology companies, so we're looking for similar things that we would look at with any technology company, and that is obviously a really strong team, some indications of product market fit, large market size, and so it's kind of similar areas that any technology investor would look at.
Yeah. And take me through some of these early investments. So we mentioned Cadence there, but there are two other companies as well that you've already backed. Can you tell us a little about those and maybe how they typify the kind of opportunities that you see ahead?
Yeah, another company that we looked at or that we've invested in is Measurable Energy, and they've created a software and hardware product that, first of all, monitors any plugged-in device and the energy usage, so they can feed back that energy information in terms of when things are being used, and then can automatically shut off plugged-in devices, so really reducing wasted power. This one's really interesting because I think we've seen a lot of products that are finding ways to kind of track energy within the buildings, but this one's actually measuring it at source, and so you're getting the most accurate information that you can get.
It also tracks the how green the power is actually coming into the building, right?
They're looking at that area as well in terms of being able to identify times when it's more renewable energy coming into the building. And then the third company is Patch, and they've created basically work and community hubs within commuter towns so that individuals don't need to be always coming into major cities to work. So that one's, again, along the kind of hybrid work model that we were looking at and the shift towards that.
And what do companies like this need from an investor such as yourselves, in addition to the capital that you're obviously putting to work?
I think they, you know, a lot of the, if you think about the three companies and think about, obviously there's differences between them and there's probably obviously some commonalities, I would say that the commonalities are, they're probably very strong on kind of product and less, you know, less sure-footed is probably one way of putting it in terms of how do you engage with this industry and the kind of key kind of stakeholders within it and how you're scaling your business within that. So, and we, you know, have a lot of experience in that, in this field. So we have a, you know, strong network, and we understand how these kind of companies from a customer point of view are thinking about, you know, building their own sort of sustainability stack and how like Cadence or Patch or Measurable Energy would be a part of that. So there's a clear kind of domain, I think, expertise that we're bringing to the table. Mm-hmm. Then there's, you know, and Mary's probably stronger on this than I am, actually, like an operational kind of capability from how you actually build, you know, your operations as a company, your marketing function, your sales function, and things like this. And so we don't do that many investments a year. We're not looking to do that many a year. We're only looking to probably do 3 to 4 a year.
Okay.
And the main reason for that is that frees up a lot of time for us to then spend with those companies sort of post-investment. So, you know, we do all of the kind of work and the diligence on the companies up front, and we get to know them super, super well as through that process. We're then probably, in most cases, it's not 100%, but on the board of the companies afterwards. And there's a ton of work that we're doing outside of that arena as well. You know, Patch, for example, is just, you know, taking on a sort of a debt sort of program to expand its operations and expand the number of sites. You know, I happened to, prior to going to venture, did a lot of work on real estate debt, so, you know, spent a lot of time, you know, helping them out on that front and in terms of how to think about that, how to structure it. So it's I guess, customizable, because obviously every company has strengths and weaknesses and they're not the same, but there's, I guess, there are some commonalities. I think, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think, yeah, exactly. And we've been investing in early stage. I've worked in early stage companies. And so these companies do need support when it comes to just the challenges that any early stage company has as they're looking at product market fit, as they're looking how to kind of fill the top of the funnel, how to convert their funnel into sales. And so any kind of support, I think, is important for companies to have on that side.
So it sounds like, in terms of how you'd characterize your relationship with companies, with their founders, it's very much hands on. You are there on call to sort of guide them through challenges. It's not simply about the capital that you're providing.
Yeah, and I think it's quite founder led as well. It's in terms of, Dom mentioned, kind of customizable. It's whatever. It's what the team, the skill set that they have on hand, and then how can we provide additional support to that. And we're not looking to kind of make the companies get any kind of specific support, but really we want to understand their needs and then help them along their journey.
Yeah, I think, like, it's important to, I guess, just clarify that we're hands-on, but that doesn't mean that we're running the business.
Sure.
Right. So, and nor are we looking to do that. But what we are kind of keen for is to have a kind of a partnership relationship with the companies, and that there are a lot of different elements to that. It's like, you know, part of our job, you know, rightly or wrongly, or, you know, happily or unhappily, is to sometimes be honest. We're always to be honest, but there's some hard truths in that, and that's also part of the, you know, if we have a strong partnership in that, that obviously flourishes and works. So we want the company to kind of dictate how that engagement with us looks like, because they know their skills and their gaps and everything else. But we want that to be a sort of an open door kind of relationship. And so, and that can take many different forms. It can be warmings. It's, you know, maybe constantly on WhatsApp. It's a combination of meeting up for, you know, a beer, or, you know, it fluctuates depending on where, I guess, the founders and the company kind of is in terms of its cycle and its progress.
What kind of hard truths do you have to tell? And I wouldn't put you on the spot and expect you to name particular cases and companies, but what kind of issues are you able to help founders perhaps face up to that maybe they do need your assistance in getting to grips with?
You want to go first?
Yeah, I think it's we're not there to make founders feel good specifically, and nor do they want us to. I mean, they want kind of honest feedback so that they can actually build these businesses and scale these businesses, and that's the founder's goals. And so I think when it comes to hard truths, it really just is honest opinions on where they are. I mean, often it's honest opinions on where they are on product market fit, on their sales, on their marketing, because that's important for the companies to know. And I think as well, we've seen a lot of companies, we've worked with a lot of founders, and if you, especially if this is the first company that you've started, you don't always know what good looks like, or when you should be concerned, or what metrics should look like, or how do you benchmark those. And so providing any feedback we can, and if that means that these benchmarks are off, or you should be closing more deals, or maybe you should convert the pipeline, like, that's something that I think the founders want to hear so that they can make the improvements that they need to make.
Yeah.
I think, like, you know, Mary and I were talking about this, I think, only yesterday, that the, you know, the role that we have is quite a hard one sometimes, because you want to be honest, and if there's hard truths, you know, obviously being able to communicate those. But at the end of the day, you are on the company side, right? So you are there to do, you know, particularly if you're on the board or whatever is best for the company. So, you know, that is sometimes a difficult line to sort of straddle, if you know what I mean. I would say that probably if you were to reduce this all down to one, you know, one kind of issue, it's probably around decision making, right? And that affects, you know, probably everything within business, whether it's, you know, finances or sales or product market fit, whatever. You know, quite often, you know, founders have the right instincts about what is working well and what isn't working well, but they don't necessarily pull the trigger on the decisions, especially on the stuff that isn't working well, quickly enough. And that is costly essentially, at the end of the day. So it costs some time and it costs some money. So, and actually part of our job really is to kind of empower their own, you know, gut instincts, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And we sort of seen that because we've been diligencing them for quite a long time. So we sort of gotten to understand that. And if you don't think that your sales team is working as well as it should be, then, you know, make the decision, because it's better to sort of move quickly and make the change than, oh, I'll just wait another 3 months to see how this quarter kind of pans out or whatever.
Absolutely.
It is. Yeah. Particularly in a, you know, an industry like ours where things tend to move slowly anyway. So those data points aren't coming to you thick and fast every week.
Can we talk about the investors that have backed the fund so far, and maybe get your any insights into the, you know, the state of the fundraising market at the moment?
So, from the point of view of the investors that have come in so far, I think we were quite fortunate that we had repeat investors that have sort of backed us before, plus founders that we'd previously invested in. So obviously knew us well, knew, you know, all the stuff that we've just been talking about in terms of how our approach to companies, how we work with them, etc. You know, Jem from Plentific, I think, gave you guys a quote on your on your piece, for example. So he's obviously one of those. So that is a very, you know, in our opinion, a very positive, obviously, endorsement. So people that we've worked with, invested in before, and have obviously invested with us before, coming back and supporting us. As far as the wider kind of, you know, fundraising market is concerned, it's challenging. There's no two ways about that. And I think that's, it doesn't matter what asset class you're in.
Sure.
From what I'm hearing, it's a challenge everywhere. So whether it's real estate, you know, venture, private equity, it's a tough market. So we're very pleased and proud that we got this done in that, you know, in those difficult circumstances. And are reasonably confident about what the road ahead looks like. I mean, there's a lot of work to be done, but we'll see how that goes.
And the two of you have been investing together now for more than a decade. So I was
nearly 10 years.
Nearly 10 years.
10 years.
As a final question, what have the big learnings been for you during that time? And what makes a personal and professional relationship like that work over that time period?
I guess there's a couple of things. I think, first of all, Dom and I have different backgrounds and different skill sets, and I think that's really important as a founding team. I mean, it's important for founding teams for the companies we invest in as well. And as part of that, we then bring, I think, our backgrounds as we're discussing and looking at potential companies. And so I think that's really valuable, just having different perspectives and sometimes healthy discussions and healthy debates around that as well. And then I think as well, I mean, we've worked together for a period of time, and so we've gotten to know each other and we kind of know how each other's works. We trust each other. And I think that's really important when as a co-founding team and to kind of optimize that relationship.
Yeah, and I would just add to that by saying that I think we do have pretty robust differences on, like, our perspectives, because we have very different backgrounds, and I think that is super valuable. But we are always on the same page when it comes to things that are like values. So, like, in terms of how we want to build this firm, how we want our companies to operate, you know, our approach to, you know, engaging with companies and how we, you know, how we want to be doing the best for them and what that sort of, that what that needs to look like. And actually we spent a lot of time thinking about what that needs to look like from an investment kind of strategy point of view and things like that. So that sort of doing 3 to 4 investments a year was a byproduct of a lot of work on that. So yeah, I think we're quite unique in terms of the background that we have, the length of time that we've been working together, but also this sort of softer values piece, which is kind of basically always brings us back onto the, you know, same footing.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like it's working, and I'm sure that as this fund is invested, we'll be chatting more about the deals to be done and the companies that you're helping. But Dom, Mary, for now, thank you both for joining EG and sharing your thoughts. Thank you too for listening, and for more real estate news, analysis, and data, you can head to egi.co.uk/news.